Steve Dale back with you on WGN. And I am so honored to have this person on the telephone with me, Dr. Berute Galdikas, who is a field researcher responsible for everything we know about orangutans. And her story, well, I will let her tell you the story, except to say, Berute, so amazing to have the opportunity to speak with you again.
Well, it's great to speak to you also. It's been a long, long time.
Yes, it has. I worked for you at one time, and some of my greatest memories in my life, truly, are trudging through the forest, getting up at 6 in the morning. You knew, this was way before GPS, but you knew, somehow the guides knew, I did not know, exactly where the orangutan would nest, because like all great apes, chimpanzees, gorillas, orangutans, bonobos, they nest at night, and then if you get up before they do, they're in the same place, they're in the same bed, really, they do make a bed. So we'd get up and we'd take notes about everything they did, everything they ate, everyone they would communicate with in the forest, another orangutan that they would happen to bump into. And sometimes when the orangutans were annoyed by us, they were up in the trees and they would intentionally lose their, how shall I say? You know what I'm about to say. They would lose their bowels right above us. But it was but it was such an amazing, amazing experience. And I thought, you know, I mean, the good that you did and continued to do. So let's go way back. When Dr. Lewis Leakey first decided, okay, I want three ladies, the Avengers of the great apes. And he chose Dr. Jane Goodall, and he chose Dr. Diane Fossey, and he chose you. Why did he choose you, and why orangutans?
I think the real reason is that we chose ourselves. And so when Lewis Leakey met us, he was very struck by our determination to study the great apes, whether or not he helped us. And he decided that he wanted to help us. So we basically chose ourselves. I mean, Jane Goodall had a commitment to animals, even when she was a child. Diane Fossey went to Africa to look at gorillas. And I approached him and told him what I had already done over the 3 years that I was seeking sponsorship and financial help to go to Indonesia or Malaysia and study wild orangutans. So basically, you know, we say Lewis Leakey chose us, but in reality, we chose ourselves because there were other people who came up to Lewis Leakey and wanted his help. And he didn't give it to them. But he was convinced. He gave me several tests before he decided to help me.
Now,
and one of the tests I passed, interesting enough, another one I didn't. But the fact that I passed the one made a deep impression on him.
What was the one task?
Oh, well, he put a number of cards upside down on the coffee table in front of us and said, which are red and which are black? And I said, I don't know which are red and which are black, but I noticed the ones that have the slightest little fold are different from the ones that don't. And what he had done is he had just sort of touched them. And so there was a difference, and I spotted the difference. And that was the important thing, because he then realized that I was perceptive. I was perceptive to small differences, and that, you know, I was observant. So
that is,
didn't worry about the second test.
No, that is fascinating in of itself. So he wanted someone who would be observant, but he also wanted people that were committed. And I've talked to Jane Goodall about this and Diane Fossey, and I'm sure over the years probably you too, that he specifically, because the researchers who previously did this tough work in the middle of, whether it be in Africa or in your case in Borneo, in the jungle, traipsing through the jungle every day, dealing, in your case, with leeches and other wild animals and all the rest. Previous to you three, they were men. But he wanted women specifically because women would stick to it. He thought men would do it for a year, go away, publish a paper, and that would be that. Go on the lecture circuit, maybe write a book. But women, he thought, would be committed for a lifetime. And if that story is true, he was kind of right about that.
Well, the thing is, he actually did support a few women who are not well known to study, if I'm not mistaken, gorillas, but they didn't stay. And part of the reason they didn't stay is because the situation in the field was extremely difficult, I mean, physically. And men didn't stay, probably, and this is my own interpretation, is because they were very interested in academic achievement. Like you say, you know, they did the standard 1 year or 2 years in the field, and then they went off, like you say, published some papers, even a book, and then they moved on. They became professors, or they did this, they did that. And the women who Louis Leakey encouraged and supported were women who deeply cared about the animals. And it wasn't until I cared about academia, but mainly I cared about the animals. And so this is why when Louis Leakey said something to me, and I forget exactly what he said about, you know, staying in the field, I said I would stay forever. And then the other thing is, he asked me if I would take out my appendix. And I told him, I said, I'll take out my appendix, and I will also take out my tonsils.
Because that
for going into the field.
Is that because then if you took them out, I've not heard this before, if you took them out before going into the field, that could not happen as an emergency? Is that, I mean.
Exactly.
Wow.
Exactly, you got it. And Diane Fossey did take out her appendix. I don't know about Jane. But I never took out my appendix. I still have it. This moment as we speak to you, and I never took out my tonsils. But interestingly enough, one of my weak points is the fact that I often get, you know what it calls, throat aches. I often get throat infections.
Uh-huh.
When I get the flu or the cold or whatever. So my throat is vulnerable, probably one of the most vulnerable parts of my body. And that's because I still have my tonsils.
But, nevertheless, you stuck with it all those years. So I want to ask you, and then we have to go to a break, but orangutans, is it 98% of our genetics that we share?
About that. I think it's like 97 point something. It's basically 98%. And then, of course, chimpanzees are basically 99%, and gorillas are somewhere in between. And the interesting thing about orangutans that most people don't know, most even scientists aren't really aware of it, is that orangutans are not our cousins. Orangutans are not our siblings. Orangutans are our aunts and uncles because they are more closely related than we are our early human ancestors.
Interesting. The other thing about orangutans is they can get their use of tools. So at some point in time, years ago, not today, researchers then were amazed that any animal species can use tools. Not only can orangutans use tools, but they use them very, very well. In some cases, certainly better than I would be able to do. They are natural DIY animals. We'll talk about that, and we'll talk about what's happening to the orangutans today and why that can and does matter, or at least it should, to all of you when we come back with this amazing lady who, by the way, is being honored. We'll talk about that, too, on WGN. Steve Dale back with you on WGN. It's 1:48. And I am honored, truly honored, to speak with this woman who's been honored so many times by so many different organizations for the work that she has spent a lifetime and continues to do to study not only orangutans, but all the other animals that live in the same forest as orangutans. Dr. Berute Galdikas, who was chosen back with Dr. Diane Fossey and Dr. Jane Goodall to study this, in this case, the orangutan, this particular great ape. I remember when I made it to Borneo, and I first got there as a volunteer, you said, here's the orientation. You would know what you were having for dinner, because if you saw a net in the river, you knew we would be having fish. If you saw chicken feathers in the river, very fresh chicken. And if you saw neither, we'd probably be having peanut butter sandwiches. But I'll tell you, the conversations we had at dinner, I still remember them, Berute. And it was one of the best times, truly, of my life. And certainly one in which I was in the best shape of my life, going through the forest every single day, looking and finding orangutans. But also, we rehabbed orangutans that were taken in. And this isn't as much of an issue with chimpanzees or gorillas, but orangutans, it was, I don't know if it still is, where people remove them from the forest to think somehow they're going to make a pet. And an orangutan will never be a good pet. And then you would reintroduce and go through the process of teaching orangutans how to be wild orangutans again. Does that still go on?
That still goes on. We are still doing it, but we're no longer doing it just in Camp Leakey. We have an orangutan care center in quarantine. The number of orangutans, ex-captive orangutans, has skyrocketed since you were there.
Wow.
Due to the destruction of the tropical rainforest. So right now we have 200, the exact number eludes me, but it's over 250. It's about 270 orangutans in our care center and in adjacent facilities in the forest. And the problem, of course, is not that they are not rehabilitated. The problem is that the forests are disappearing. So even though these orangutans are ready to go back to the wild, the forest isn't there. And that's the problem that we have. And fortunately, there's a new Minister of Forestry who came in at the end of last year. And, you know, when I met with him, I was thrilled. I couldn't believe that as he listened to me, he actually got it.
Hmm.
He actually got it. And so I'm a little bit more optimistic than I would have been last year talking to you about the fate of orangutans. We still have some hope.
That is
the orangutan numbers are way down.
Yeah.
But we have some hope now.
That is so good to hear.
I'm not fooling myself.
Well, I hope so too. So why, and politicians will fool you at times. Why, though, is it so important that we not only save the orangutans, but the forest they live in and all the other animals who live there?
Well, there are a number of reasons. But I think the most basic reason for all of us, for humankind, is that if we want to mitigate climate change, one of the things that we can do is we can save monumental and ancient forests. And we can also rewild and plant new forests. But the problem is, you know, when you plant a tree, you're going to have to wait 10, 20, 30, 40 years until that tree becomes mature and those forests go back to their more or less original state. So we need to save forests. We need to save trees. Every tree is precious. And, you know, people have all kinds of other ideas for saving and, you know, saving Earth and mitigating climate change. But the most important thing that we can do is cherish our trees, plant trees, even in our front yards and our backyards. And so saving the forest, by saving orangutans, we save the forest.
And why? Why is that? I don't know that people know exactly. I mean, we've heard of the Amazon rainforest, but I don't know that people know exactly how expansive the forest is in Borneo, therefore how impactful it is, not only to Indonesia, but the entire world.
Well, the forests of Southeast Asia, which include Borneo, are the third largest forests in the world, and it's certainly tropical forests. And, you know, if we want to have oxygen on our planet, you know, forests provide oxygen. You know, forests every day, right, pour out the oxygen and, you know, mitigate the effects of carbon, what is it, carbon dioxide,
mm-hmm.
you know, that are responsible for global warming or, you know, global climate change. I don't even want to call it global warming because that's what it is, but it's basically global climate change. And sometimes, you know, people don't understand that, you know, when you have, you know, snowstorms in places where you never had them before, this is a result of global climate change, which is tied to global warming.
Why are the forests being cut away at so aggressively there?
In Borneo, they're being cut. The deforestation is occurring because of the expansion of palm oil. And, you know, people say that palm oil is a way of printing money. You know, it's a cheap vegetable oil. It's used in virtually, I would say, most processed foods. You know, you look at the back of your potato chip bag, and it's got palm oil in it. Now, they don't necessarily say it's palm oil. They'll say it's vegetable oil. We don't say what kind of vegetable oil it is. It's probably palm oil. So, you know, the excessive use of palm oil is what is leading to the destruction of the world's tropical rainforest. And in the Amazon, palm oil is also expanding. But, of course, what the forests of the tropical rainforest of the Amazon are being cut down for is for cattle, beef, ranching. I mean, it's just horrific when we think of what's happening to the world's forests.
So, to the best of our ability, don't buy products with palm oil? Is that safe to say?
Absolutely. I mean, when I see a package of potato chips or some other, you know, food that has palm oil in it, I think if that palm oil came from Southeast Asia, then basically you're eating orangutan blood.
Hmm.
Maybe other animals, but I don't know.
No,
as the forests are demolished, all the wildlife, many of it endemic, is disappearing.
And that impacts the entire planet and impacts, actually, the locals that live there in a way that immediately may seem beneficial, but is not at all beneficial. You're being honored in New York City later this month by the Explorer Club, a very prestigious organization. Congratulations on that, Dr. Galdikas.
Well, thank you very much. I think it's one of the greatest honors I have ever received. I mean, people who have won it have included U.S. presidents like Theodore Roosevelt, astronauts, Sir Edmund Hillary, who climbed Mount Everest, James Cameron, who went down to the deepest trench in the Pacific Ocean,
well,
though he's a
You absolutely deserve this honor. I need to have you back on again because we didn't have the opportunity to even tell your story, which is amazing. And National Geographic and others, and including your own book, have had this story in it. Thank you for all the amazing work you do, and such a pleasure personally it is to reconnect with you once again. Thank you, Dr. Galdikas.
Thank you.